evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Mot. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 10, 2021. A top UN diplomat in South Sudan says the country's leaders should work together to achieve a lasting peace.
Kinds of conditions we would like to see throughout the country and outside the urban centers so that refugees and IDPs would be willing to return home.
And some Sudanese protest the lifting of fuel subsidies.
The salary of an ordinary Sudanese employee is not enough to cover all the needs, and therefore, with this increase in fuel, the situation is going to be worse.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chief of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, says UN peacekeepers have been operating in difficult situations across South Sudan. He says the mission has experienced what he called marginal reduction of its size to enable peacekeepers to have expanded capacity for supporting proactive decisions. Haysom says South Sudanese leaders should work towards creating a national vision for achieving prosperity in the country.
At the moment, there's been a very marginal reduction, but it has come hopefully also with an expanded capacities to be agile and proactive, in other words, more mobile. So we've attempted to increase what we do and how we do it. At the expense of what has been up till now a more static positioning of the peacekeepers. But quite frankly, we're also recognizing that there's a limit to what the peacekeepers achieve, at least to the extent that they are not engaged together with civilians and with those who are in the position to bring communities together. The simple act of patrolling and peacekeeping, I think, it's not enough to secure the kinds of conditions we would like to see throughout the country and outside the urban centers so that refugees and IDPs would be willing to return home.
Let us talk about the opportunities in South Sudan. You have just landed on the job. What are some of the opportunities in South Sudan that the mission can capitalize on to mitigate its objectives?
Okay, well, let me just start off by arguing from another perspective, which I think it's a difficult situation, and it's in a region which is accumulating broader political difficulties in, with reference to neighboring countries as well. So it's not an easy setting, but within that, I think progress can be made. I would want to believe that the South Sudanese elite recognize the importance of working together to create a national vision through which they can carry their people to prosperity and stability. To be sure, we can't take that for granted, but that at least is my starting assumption. And we'll be working with all the role players, stakeholders, emphasizing the need to do that. We will be, for example, I think on the 10th anniversary of the birth of the country, which is on the 9th of July, you know, looking at an audit of what's been accomplished and what needs to be accomplished with a view to emphasizing the need to move faster and to help the country move along at least along its political track. I've noticed here as well that, you know, South Sudanese are not pessimists. If they see signs of progress, they have real confidence in the future. Of course, the opposite is true as well. If they don't see signs of progress, there's enough recent history to make people quite depressed.
What is your honest assessment of what is going on with the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement? I remember meeting you or seeing you in Addis Ababa as part of the people who were watching Sudanese leaders during the negotiations. Now you are inside South Sudan, sitting with the leaders across the table. What is your honest assessment of their commitment towards ending violence in South Sudan?
Well,
You know, provided things move forward, the international community will, I think, increasingly engage, and that would be an improvement. Provided things move forward, it will create an atmosphere in which we can build trust between the parties. If things start to go backwards, it's a bit like riding a bicycle. It's just very hard to keep the bicycle standing up. I think you can't do this job if you don't have a degree of faith in people and in confidence and optimism about their capacity to find arrangements by which they can all live together in peace and harmony. The alternative is to believe that people are incapable of finding that formula with earnest intent. So that's really it. You know, I think we've got to be clear-eyed about what's possible, and at the same time, we've got to set standards of optimism and confidence about the future.
That's Nicholas Haysom, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. He spoke with me on Wednesday via telephone from the South Sudanese capital, Juba. The Sudanese transitional government has lifted all subsidies on fuel in the country. Sudanese Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim announced on Tuesday that fuel prices would be determined by cost of import, transport, taxes, and profit margins. Some residents of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, are criticizing the decision. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking during a press conference last night in Khartoum, Sudanese Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim said under the new pricing system for fuel, petrol will increase from 150 Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of 35 cents per litre, to 290 pounds, while the price of diesel will rise to 285 pounds per litre from 125 pounds. Ibrahim says the decision is in line with the economic reform policies of the transitional government to meet the demands of the high inflation rate in the country. Many Sudanese citizens were not happy with the decision. Protesters burned tires last night along various streets of Khartoum to express their outrage. Freelance reporter Amira Saleh says the decision will negatively affect her work and her family.
The salary of an ordinary Sudanese employee is not enough to cover all the needs, and therefore, with this increase in fuel, the situation is going to be worse. Up to this moment, their unclassified employees will be affected for sure. They can't be able to provide for their families.
Amu Adil, who works as an electronic technician in Khartoum's Jabra neighborhood, says the fuel price hike will affect other basic commodities in the market. He says the government is supposed to provide basic services, but instead is making life difficult for ordinary citizens.
Fuel is connected to all aspects of life. Traders will charge every single cost of transportation they paid during the process of transporting goods. They will be forced to put that cost on the commodities, and ordinary citizens will be the one paying the cost.
Haji Rasir Al-Awad, a third-year business administration student at the International University of Africa in Khartoum, says it is a bad decision at a time when the country is facing serious economic challenges. Al-Awad says higher fuel prices will mean higher transportation fees, making it difficult for students like her to get to the university.
Whenever there is an increase on the fuel, the public transport fees will be increased as well. Not only this, but I expect everything to increase. The decision will definitely affect me as a student and my family. They will be forced to look for other sources of income to allow me to go to college.
Sudan has been implementing aggressive IMF monitored reforms in the hopes of turning around its economy and attracting international investment and debt relief. Sudan continues to subsidize cooking gas, furnace oil, as well as wheat and medicines, although there are frequent shortages of those commodities. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba, where some South Sudanese female local government administrators say they are being treated unfairly compared to their male counterparts. The women say, unlike male administrators, female administrators are not being promoted, deployed, or given training opportunities. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Dozens of women working in local government administrative positions in the 10 states met in Juba this week and formed the Women in Local Government Association, or WILGA, an association they hope will address some of the challenges female local government administrators are facing. Leah Kenyi, an administrator in Juba County, says her male counterpart usually dominate meetings and decision-making processes.
They don't give that chance to women to participate, you know, in day-to-day activities. Normally, we are behind the men. So this platform is going to help us to be, you know, ahead of the men and also do what the men are doing.
Kenyi says she hopes the new association will advocate for the rights of female local government administrators and enable them to participate when it comes to making decisions. Elizabeth Henry, a government administrator in Northern Bargazal State, says the association will provide a platform through which to address the challenges female government administrators are facing, including complaints about lack of deployment or promotion. Henry says within the first 2 years of office, she will ensure that WILGA carries out an assessment in all 10 states to identify a baseline number of female administrators in the country.
The activities WILANG is going to do, first of all, they want to identify the numbers of the female administrative officers. One, because of what? To identify the gaps. Some of them who need capacity building, we can offer the training, ongoing training for the female administrative officers. And if they are not deployed well, they have the complaint, all the complaint will come in to the association so that we will go and follow if there is a complaining. Regardless of those who are not be promoted, the WILANG is the one to take lead, to ask the leadership and to make advocacy and lobbying to the women.
Lina Awai believes women in local government positions will change the narratives of female administrators across South Sudan.
Women in Local Government Association is a very good association indeed to empower the women on the ground and even to raise up the names of the women in South Sudan. Because for us, we are always down. Even for the men, they say, women, they don't have anything. They used to talk a lot, but they don't have anything. But for us, we are going to show them what women will get in South Sudan. And to be listened even to the voice of the women all over the South Sudan, my expectation is just opportunity to give us opportunity in any activity, whether inside or outside South Sudan.
The Director General of Local Government in Central Equatorial State, Emmanuel Constantine, praised women in local government. He says the State Ministry of Local Government and Law Enforcement have been instructed to prioritize recruiting female administrators to ensure equal opportunities.
We as local government in Central Equatoria, the women that play the role part. Central Equatoria, the women the same with the men. They give them the same assignment. Now, some of them that lead to the level, they handle with the counties and the payout. That's how it, not this association will end in the national government, but go up to the state. They are ready to.
Constantine says administrators are the officials entrusted to deliver services to local communities in Buma and Payams. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at vaccination gaps in Africa. That story is lined up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of a life well lived?
When you accomplish your set goals. Like, for example, when you say, I must finish university, even if you don't work, as long as you're finished, there is no problem. Even if I die today after finish.
when someone is living a godly way, focused on achieving his or her own goals, and trying to be morally upright.
So it's not everybody that actually have a dream, but there are some this set of people that have a dream and then working towards to achieve that dream.
A life well lived is one where one is able to fulfill his dreams, his aspirations, his goals, all that he wants before he dies.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. By any measure, the number of those being vaccinated against COVID-19 in Africa is running behind the rest of the world. Health experts warn that failure to vaccinate the 1.3 billion people on the continent will have a huge impact on its healthcare system and economies. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
More than a year into the COVID-19 pandemic, most African countries have vaccinated only a tiny fraction of their citizens. Nigeria, the most populous nation in Africa, has fully vaccinated just 0.1% of the population. The Africa Center for Disease Control says three countries, Tanzania, Burundi, Eritrea, and the self-declared Sahrawi Republic, have yet to receive any vaccines. While Burkina Faso has received 115,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, but has yet to give a single jab to its citizens. Abdallah Ziraba is an epidemiologist and the head of the health system at the African Population and Health Research Center in Nairobi. He says the failure to vaccinate is partly due to vaccine hesitancy among the population and underdeveloped healthcare systems, especially in non-urban areas.
The other important reason why there's been inequity is the weak healthcare system. In Africa, most people live in rural areas, and the healthcare system, which should be the system to deliver the vaccines to the last person, is not as elaborate as the population is distributed. So some people are very far away from where they can get access to vaccines, and as a consequence, they are definitely left out. But they remain at risk of getting exposed to COVID-19.
Kenya has fully vaccinated just 13,000 people out of a population of 50 million, although about 1 million have received one dose of a vaccine. Devji Atela is the Secretary General of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union. He calls for the government to allocate 1% of the country's budget to purchase COVID-19 vaccines.
Countries like, let's say, Uganda or here in Kenya and these others, we can still see the waves, the surge in the infection. So the ultimate way to have things back to normal is to vaccinate. And that's why we are asking the government that in the budget, current budget is about 3.6 trillion. If 1% of it, that's about 35 billion, is put into buying of the vaccine for the Kenyans, then we may have hope to see the opening up.
Kenya's western region is witnessing high coronavirus infections in recent weeks, and officials have warned they may have to impose a new lockdown to stop transmission. In neighboring Uganda, the government recently reintroduced a strict lockdown to fight an increase in infections. The lockdown includes shutting down the schools and religious activities and imposing travel bans within the country. Ziraba says African countries' failure to vaccinate their population will disrupt everyday life and will be a problem to the rest of the world.
It will be a cascade that will be very disruptive of the African countries' economies and healthcare system. But the rest of the world will not sit pretty, because while a big part of their population will be protected, they will not be comfortable knowing that there will be new infections coming to their borders every now and then.
Overall, Africa has recorded about 5 million cases of COVID-19 and 133,000 deaths. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Still on COVID, the president of Botswana says his government will prioritize vaccinating teachers after 50 of them died from COVID-19. Teachers had urged that schools be closed as the virus continues to claim the lives of their colleagues. For VOA News, Mkondisi Dube has more from Gaborone.
Botswana president, in a televised message to commemorate World Teachers Day yesterday, said his government was concerned about the welfare of teachers. Education sector unions had criticized Masisi's government for a slow response after at least 30 educators died from COVID-19 since March. Botswana began a third round of its vaccination program on Monday, and Masisi says teachers and other frontline workers will be at the front of the queue to receive the jab.
We will not hesitate to provide you with the necessary support for you to perform your duty under a safe environment. My government will roll out a successful and timely vaccination program to curb the impact of the disease on our people, including yourselves. Teachers, I am pleased to confirm that teachers and other frontliners will be vaccinated as a priority.
But Botswana Teachers Union President Hudlamang Utsile says the government has not done enough to protect teachers during COVID-19.
Every time a teacher goes to work, his or her life is at risk. Teachers can easily contact COVID-19 from the innocent souls whose development they are committed to. It is sad and demoralizing that despite growth evidence, the government is yet to recognize COVID-19 as the grave workplace hazard it is.
Botswana has vaccinated 149,268 of its citizens, representing 7% of the population. However, most still await the second jab. The country announced last week it has reached an agreement with vaccine supplier Moderna for an undisclosed quantity of doses. The world's leading diamond miner De Beers has pledged about $50 million to buy vaccines. Masisi says the Southern African country has procured enough to inoculate the entire adult population. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Some 200 bodies have been buried in shallow graves in and around the town of Hausen, Ethiopia, after more than 7 months of war in the Tigray region. As VOA's Heather Murdock reports from Hausen, where residents fear the fighting will continue and more people will be killed.
Some mass graves in the Ethiopian town of Hausen hold dozens of bodies. Some hold only a few. Locals say there are about 20 graves in all, containing bodies that were found in the streets of the town after multiple battles. The most recent happened just a few weeks ago.
The bodies lay out on the ground for 7 or 8 days, and there's no one to help us take them to the church. So a few of us buried them. They smelled bad, rotting, and attracting maggots.
Most Hausen residents have fled their homes, many to live in crowded camps without enough food. The town itself is in ruins. The families who remain say there is almost no way to make a living. Hausen has changed hands about 5 times since the war began in November between the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front and Ethiopian and Eritrean forces. Ethiopian troops now control most of the region, including Hausen. But fighting continues, and residents fear war could break out at any moment.
There have been so many bombings in this town. Children have died, and houses are destroyed.
In the market, few sellers make any money these days, the woman adds, but they sit there all day, hoping for luck. On the outskirts of Hausen, Lete Gourmet says she doesn't expect much luck in this beleaguered town, as residents continue to bury civilians killed in war. She says among the dead are children and the elderly.
The killing continues. Recently, we buried another 7 bodies near the church.
This war has claimed thousands of lives and left millions of people displaced. Here in Hausen, some say they are no longer afraid because they cannot imagine anything worse could happen. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Hausen, Ethiopia.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll now leave you with the song Zunjia by Ahmed Brema. We have been listening to Ahmed Brema with the song Zunjia. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine center because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.